The content shared on Your Life, Your Wealth Network reflects the views of the host and guests of the program only and are not necessarily the views of Cordasco Financial Network or its advisors. This media production is educational in nature and should not be construed as financial, legal, or tax advice or a solicitation or presentation of sale of any financial products or services. Please consult a professional prior to making any financial, tax, or legal decisions. Welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. Helping you find clarity and comfort for your life and wealth. Now, here's your host, financial advisor, and CEO of Cordasco Financial Network, Steve Cordasco.
And welcome back to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. I'm Steve Cordasco. Great show planned for you today. Here's what's affecting your life, your wealth. A study says more millennials are living with their parents than ever. I'll break down why this is the case and whether or not it's a good thing for your children. Later in the show, we'll be joined by David Goodsell. He's a finance researcher that will tell us what everyone wants to see changed about their retirement plans. But now, I'd like to jump into a topic that should be a nice, warm, holiday season, warm and fuzzy topic. That's charitable giving, but I got something festering on my side when it comes to giving. And every time I think about giving, Jill Stein's image of her making an all please beg for money to go ahead and do a recount in certain states. Now, this isn't breaking news, right? I mean, day by day, we're hearing more and more about recount shenanigans going on. And it has to do with where I'm going in this direction, is that normally this time of year, I do conversations and talks about charitable giving, and I'm sitting here thinking, look at all the people, the millions and millions of dollars. I don't know, we're up to probably $12 or $13 million in Jill Stein, who has no chance of winning election, making a bunch of noise and nonsense and asking people to give to her cause, knowing darn right well that the majority of those who believed in her platform and her run for presidency were a lot of people who live paycheck to paycheck, and frankly, a lot don't have a paycheck. Many are the millennials that we're going to be talking about who are living at home. Now, I know Cordasco, come on, it's not about her winning. No, but it's about her being the poster child of give me money, hear me roar. To me, I see her as standing in front of this red pot, ringing a bell. Ding, 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 ding. All you got to do is put your chump change in there. Ding, ding, just a few cents. Ding, ding, ding. Raised $3 or $4 million, but more than her campaign off of nickel and dime schmucks. Who many of them stand, they're next to the Ben Franklin Bridge with the sign, homeless, help me. Ding, ding, ding. Then all of a sudden, big donors, you get Soros and the kooks coming in and throwing bigger dollars in to match. Now you got this momentum thing going on, right? Now, it goes back to giving, charitable giving, because many are so worked up. I'm trying to get to the root of why people are so stupid to give their money to a cause that's going to go nowhere. Most of which voted for President Obama. And he's flat out said that the election's the election. It's done. There's no fraud. So what's happening here? What's happening is what happens to a lot of people that get caught up in doing things they shouldn't do and making mistakes. It's about fear. It's playing off of fear. It's playing off of anxiety and stress. And it's a darn shame that that's what's happening right now. Because at the end of the day, I got to ask the question, is this fraud? And I've done radio for 20 years. I've been through Katrina. We've been through 9/11 together. We've been through Sandy together. As we localize this a little bit more, we've been through Bernie Madoff together the day in New York where we were broadcasting live out front of the Lipstick building as Bernie Madoff was going down. How's Bernie Madoff tie into this? Because tons of charitable money was involved. So the question has to be asked if this is fraud. And you got Hillary lurking in the shadows. Yeah, I'm going to support this thing. It's a money grab. But we can learn from this. And here's some lessons to learn. As we hear all the noise about a recount, the lesson is this. The more somebody can make you afraid, stressed, or magnify anxiety, the easier it is for them to pick your wallet. And you got it going on right now, man. They jumped on this. There were so many people. Did you go look at some of the YouTube videos of people that were just devastated when they found out that Donald Trump had won the presidency? Little kids crying. They don't even know what they're crying about. Did you see that video? He's laying on his kitchen floor crying. Mama's saying, what's the matter? What's the matter? Let me hear. Well, look how much anxiety's out there. Here we go. Take one.
Who ended up winning?
Provincio.
Who ended up winning? He did win, though. Hillary Clinton didn't win.
So there you go. Mama's got the boy all worked up. Poor kid's about 5 years old. That's just one of thousands of videos that are out there of people going absolutely berserk. And again, to go back, it's easy to tap into people's emotions when there's anxiety, when there's fear and there's stress. That's why the stock market is such a cesspool of salespeople that can really get what they want out of somebody. Even to the point of somebody who is trying to sell you the stock market by saying the market's up, you're not in. You better get in. You're going to miss out. It happens always. You get insurance hucksters out there. Oh my God, be careful of the stock market. You'll lose everything you have, even though you're diversified. I don't know anybody who's ever lost everything they have being diversified, who has actually matched their goals up with a whole mix of investments. But you gotta, there's the only one solution out there, and it's this. For years, it could have been just a CD at a bank. For years, it was annuities. For years, it was structured products. And now it's indexed annuities, which most good financial advisors can show. But usually, it's a piece of an overall puzzle. But today, there's just so much stoking of anxiety, and it parallels this situation with raising money for a recount. The fact that that so much money could be raised when there's so many people out there with needs, real needs, that money could go to, that it's putrid. It's putrid that two of those individuals, Hillary or Jill Stein, could have been elected. Are you kidding me? The best quote I saw is maybe she's buying a beach house next to Bernie's. You know, Bernie bought a big house. I mean, I can't wait to see if it gets cleaned up. But boy, I tell you, stress, anxiety, and fear can do a lot. And that's usually when people make the biggest mistakes. I was watching a show the other day, and my son, Vincent, every time this commercial comes on, it was one of those educational shows. It's always like on National Geographic or one of the shows where there's information given on the cable channels. And it's a commercial that comes on and has sad-looking animals, usually a dog that's malnutritioned or, you know, a cat that's got some, you know, ooziness coming from its eyes. And then there's a real soft-spoken person with some piano music playing in the background to create the drama of how you need to give $10 a month so that these animals can be taken care of. Look, I'm not the Grinch here. You know, at the end of the day, my son can't take it. Dad, turn the TV. You know, because he says turn it off, because the first time he saw it, he was running around looking for the phone to sign up. And I'm like, listen, relax, big guy. You're 13 years old. We have four dogs. We have rescue shelter dogs. We have pedigree dogs. But you have to know where your money's going. I used it as a lesson. Where is it going? It's going to cost you over $100. Dude, you don't have $100 right now unless you want to start cutting the lawn. I mean, really cutting the lawn, not just having it on your chore chart and not getting to it. So let's go through this. What is the charity? What do they do? What's it about? And I said, bottom line is you don't know where the money goes. You don't know how much of that money is actually getting to that puppy or that older dog that somebody disposed of, or the fact that that's even real and not some opportunist out there who says, yeah, we're going to give 20% of it or 30% or 50% of it to animal organizations, and then the rest of it gets put through some type of payday for someone. It's the same thing what people do at seminars and workshops. You go there, there's piano music playing, there's sounds, there's something that appeals to the person who's there to create a feeling, an emotion. And when you can tap that emotion, boy, you can pick a pocket. This is the first year I like to showcase a charity, since we are talking charities, that do it right. This year, for our clients, on the behalf of our clients for the holidays, I gave to a cause that I'm able to get to know intimately. And the particular cause that I decided to give to, none of the money went to Recount. But boy, if that Recount money could go to these two organizations that we've adopted here at Cardesco Financial Network, it could do a lot. One is the Marine Corps Scholarship Foundation. Now, the Marine Corps Scholarship Foundation provides scholarships for family members of those who served in the Marine Corps who want to get an education, who need to get an education. But I drill down a little further. What I like about the Marine Corps Scholarship Foundation, you're allowed within the apparatus to direct dollars to certain types of platforms within there. For example, the donation we made on clients' behalf to the Marine Corps Scholarship Foundation went to trade and apprenticeships. How many programs out there do you ever hear asking to raise money to help kids with apprenticeship and scholarships? I mean, apprenticeship and trade. Everything today is about college, which is fine. But there's just a lot of kids that don't go the direction nor want to go the direction of college. They need help too. That's what I like about that organization, but you got to drill down into these things. What was the emotional tug for me to give? Well, we have a passion for education here at our firm. We also have a passion for those who have served our country, who allow me to come on and say that Jill Stein and Hillary might be committing fraud here. Look, at the end of the day, it's illegal to make a lot of noise about a bank and start to scream and shout that a bank is doing something wrong, or there's shadiness going on, or they're weak because it causes run on the banking system. That's illegal. It's called creating a public frenzy. I see nothing wrong with arguing that Jill Stein and Hillary are causing a public frenzy over a few states in voting shenanigans. There's potential frenzy. People running in the streets and making a bigger deal about this when the White House has come out and flat out said, no shenanigans. We have no any type of evidence of shenanigans. So anyway, it pulls these things together. Okay, this organization, wonderful organization, Marine Corps Scholarship Foundation, allows for those who have put themselves in harm's way for our freedoms to take care of their loved ones. That's huge. The other is the National Medal of Honor Museum Foundation, because it's localized. It's here. And it gives us, again, an education. When kids go to the museum, they see the National Medal of Honor showcase locally here in our backyard. So those are two organizations that mean a lot to us. We do our homework. It has to, the National Medal of Honor Museum Foundation is raising money to build the museum so that it can be an ongoing, lifelong, local here to us in the Delaware Valley education tool for school kids to go see. As we've just found with this last administration, less and less importance of those that fight for our country and the importance of how we became a country to be so free and those that have defended those freedoms. So don't want to be a Scrooge. I just want to say, hey, in this time, in this holiday season, this time of giving, it's very important to know the cause you're giving to, what it's about. And I think this should be a page. The page should be taken out of voter fraud and Jill Stein and the Clintons trying to create noise in the Democratic Party of asking people who, frankly, a lot of them can't afford to give, but to be playing on the emotions and the fear and the anxiety is a disgrace. You can tie this all back to you, your money, and what you do with your money, because it could be coming to you too. There are people all the time trying to tap into your anxiety, your fear, and magnify it, make it bigger to get you to give them your money, either in the form of an investment idea that they get paid on, or it could be charity. My advice, find those that want to bring that anxiety level down, that stress level down, that fear level down. Do not do anything with your wallet until you can get that anxiety, that emotion, that fear under control. And if you can't do it on your own, you need to find somebody who can help you do it. I'm Steve Cardasco. This is the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. Fear and anxiety and how to manage that is a big part of what we do. We do lifestyle coaching, and it's exactly that, helping you manage your emotions. Why? Because when somebody makes a quick, emotional, anxiety-ridden decision, it's usually impulsive, oftentimes irrational, and majority of the time, detrimental to your wealth and your life. I'm Steve Cardasco. Thanks for being here. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't forget, you can also follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/CFNplan. That's facebook.com/CFNplan. Back in a moment.
Hi, Hugh Hewitt here. Do you have a sound retirement strategy? Have you taken the time to sit down and write a plan for achieving your retirement dream? Sadly, most of us spend more time planning our vacations than our own financial future. I'm here to tell the Delaware Valley a name that most people probably already know. Steve Cardasco. You've been listening to Steve for the last 25 years. You've been reading his articles in the Philadelphia Business Journal, Forbes, TheStreet.com. Steve Cardasco and his team have just come out with a new guide for retirement planning called Your Plan to a Successful Retirement. Get your copy right now at cfnplan.com. That's cfnplan.com. The guide is packed with helpful tips like how to make a retirement plan work for you, generating cash flow in retirement, tax saving strategies, ways to reduce stock market stress, investment solutions that match your risk, how to bring comfort and clarity to your retirement, much, much more. And now for my Hugh Hewitt listeners, I strongly recommend you get a copy of Steve Cardasco's guide, Your Plan to a Successful Retirement. Get your copy now at cfnplan.com. That's CFN, N as in network, plan.com. Go now to cfnplan.com.
And welcome back to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. I'm Steve Cardasco. Joining me back again by popular demand is David Goodsell. David, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back, Steve.
Yep, you're executive director at the Durable Portfolio Construction Research Center. Did lots of good work there. New study that came out about retirement savings habit that caught my attention. Thought I would dig into it and share with our audience some of the findings that came from that research. Can you explain the premise behind the research that was conducted?
Well, we've been doing this for about 4 years. We like to look at what the attitudes and perceptions and behaviors of people are in defined contribution plans, with the goal of really understanding what their challenges are. And I'd say this year, when we look at this, one of the things we see is after 40 years that people have added features to defined contribution plans like auto-enrollment, auto-escalation, target date funds, the industry is handing over the keys to a fully loaded savings vehicle to individuals. But we really haven't taken the time to teach them how to drive, and as a result, the tank is empty and it's going to be challenging to fund retirement.
Let's talk a little bit about that, and specifically to, I guess, the baby boomer generation, which tends to be the ones that are now looking at retirement a little bit more closely because it's around the corner. Talk about what these, I call them DC plans, the defined contribution plans are. Because when we start to use that terminology, just based on the premise of what you found is that we haven't taught them how to drive yet, it's almost like saying, hey, you know, let's talk about the drive shaft. Most people don't even know what it is.
Exactly. Well, you know, I think people used to think about retirement in terms of a company pension. And that was a defined benefits plan. You knew what you were going to get a payout from it, what the income would be coming from it. We've gradually seen over the past four decades people really transition to a defined contribution plan in which individuals contribute to their own retirement savings with employers usually giving a match. So it's basically the 401k plan, and a few other examples would be the most common that people understand.
Okay, great. So this is, explain real quickly of kind of where we've been, the history behind defined contribution versus defined benefit.
Well, I think you saw that defined contribution was created about 35 years ago. The idea being that it would create more opportunity for individuals to save. And I think you do see there's a bit of a pension crisis with the old model. You have more people living longer who are part of those plans, so it's very difficult for a company pension to be able to provide the income there. They have a great number of liabilities. So a defined contribution plan really makes it a partnership between the employer and the individual to really generate the savings needed to fund retirement.
A 401k plan.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. We had the founder of the 401k plan on.
Oh, no kidding.
Not long ago. Yeah, he's actually a local guy here. And, you know, it was fascinating. I'll have to send you the link. But it was kind of neat in talking about it. And these things probably do need to be overhauled. So, David, let's talk a little bit more about the 401k system. We've had recently Teresa Dirgeli on. We had James on from, I guess, the private equity firm, you know, trying to talk about the overhaul of retirement systems. Tony James talking about overhauling this type of system. I know you guys studied the habits, or, you know, savings habits of those when it comes to retirement, but we also have the vehicle involved here, right? So let's talk a little bit about that as we set this thing up, and then I have some other questions with regards to how this will help us retire better.
Okay.
So do we need an overhaul to the current system?
Well, I think everyone's looking at how to make it better, make it easier for individuals to save. You know, we see a number of individuals struggle to be able to contribute because they're dealing with monthly bills that are too high, or maybe healthcare costs. So there's definitely this short-term pressure that keeps people off their long-term goals. But as a vehicle, it's a very strong vehicle. It creates a lot of opportunity to generate the savings you need over the long term.
Now, 55% of baby boomers, according to study, think that it should be mandatory for individuals to contribute to the retirement fund. What do you think some of the factors are behind those numbers?
Well, I think, first off, it's a challenge, as we were just saying, to save. It's hard to be able to find the extra money to put away and to be able to kind of discipline yourself to put it there. What we found interesting, too, that number for baby boomers is very high, but even higher among millennials and Generation X. So I think part of the pressure that people feel and the desire to have this is that if you look at what the Social Security Trust Fund report said, Social Security is fully funded till 2034, but after that, they can only guarantee that they're at three-quarters funding. What you do see because of that is you see almost three-quarters of baby boomers say, I'm going to have Social Security benefits available to me when I retire. But only 57% of Generation X and only 55% of millennials believe that it's going to be there. So I think people are feeling this pressure to be able to make sure they can have a comfortable and secure retirement, and they're really looking for new ideas.
We're talking about a recent study, ladies and gentlemen, done by the executive director at the Durable Portfolio Construction Research Center, David Goodsell. He's been on with us before, and it's talking about the retirement savings habits of us here in this country. And one thing that the study mentions, David, is investor values. Can you explain what those values are and how much they impact how much someone's willing to invest?
Well, it's one of the interesting questions to us. You know, we've been looking at this across all of our surveys this year. The idea of SRI, socially responsible investing, or ESG, which is environmental, social, and governance issues. And we asked directly of the plan participants, how important it is to you to have investments that reflect your personal values? And we see that, you know, large numbers want to have that available to them. About 84% of the younger investors, millennials, say that they want to make the world a better place while they're growing their assets, that's a priority. We also see that Generation X investors, large numbers of them, believe it's important to invest in ethical companies. So one of the routes to doing that is to be able to provide these types of investments. There's a whole class known as socially responsible, or ESG, that allow not only to have screens around what type of companies go into a portfolio, but also actively look out to thematic opportunities, whether it's urbanization or sustainability, and try and find growth opportunities there. I think it's a case of people who are interested in doing well by doing good.
So what do you do in a particular situation where the argument is our future of quality of life, having enough savings, being able to keep up with longevity equals saving money? And hence we're debating whether it should be forced savings or not. But yet returns are a big part of it. So hence socially responsible, value-driven investing for a long time has tended to underperform. And then whenever we seem to find something that can perform, I can't seem to show it to anybody because somebody is always jaded about one or two investments that are in there. How can you call Exxon a good company? You know what I mean? It's like, so what do we do here in this particular case? Obviously, you give people the option, right? Many millennials want to be value-based, invested, socially responsible, yet they need a certain return number in the end. And if you're limiting your universe of selections to invest in because something is cleaner, greener, or whatever it may be that is important to you, it may be underperforming.
Well, I think there's a new generation of thinking around this type of investing. It's not necessarily trying to eliminate bad actors out of the portfolio, although that's an important part. There's also those who look out at trends, long-term secular trends that could be driving business growth and creating, you know, stock opportunity for individuals to invest in. And that's that idea of who are the companies who are participating in a sustainable energy system. And as interest in that grows, you would expect that you would see growth among those companies. But it is definitely something that individuals are interested in having in their plan. One of the things we see is that a significant number say that they would be considering to contribute more to their plan if they had that option. And in fact, those who don't participate think it could be an incentive to having them participate. So I guess I'd say if it helps raise the amount of assets that individuals contribute to the plan, that's a good thing.
It is, until, you know, I guess, and I know, it's eventually if somebody's not, if it's not working, right, they give up on it, right, and sour towards it. So one thing I've done as a financial advisor for those that I help with wealth, it's usually family members who bring their children to me who are millennials, right? And so they're looking for advice, and they are very conscious, right, as I remember I was too. I don't think I wore leather until I was, you know, paying taxes and had a real job and, you know, didn't eat meat. And so, you know, I went through a phase and, you know, it is what it is, right? So everybody's got a cause, a passion for something. So one thing I do to try to help bridge the gap of avoidance, meaning a lot of people just avoid putting away for the future because they can't find something, a way to accept investing in something that might have, you know, some people go as far as, hey, that company contributed to the Republican Party, so therefore I'm not investing, or the Democrat Party, I'm not investing. It can get nutty. What I say is, look, just take 10%. 10% to your cause. Because if socially responsible investing tends not to keep up with overall investing, or you don't get enough diversification out of it anyway, just come up with a percentage. That seems to at least bridge the gap a little bit, right? Gets people in the game. Shifting gears on that thought, new studies are out I guess more in the mainstream media. These studies have been out in the past. You might have had some work in this in the past, but we're not looking for a very rosy picture from investment returns from stocks and bonds over the next decade. I've been saying now for the last few years, we can't expect that 10% rate of return, but it seems now to the forefront is many big firms in New York and many investment companies and pundits saying you shouldn't expect any more than 5% from a stock and bond portfolio. How's that going to bode for somebody believing in their 401k system?
Well, I think it's important to keep that in perspective, too. I mean, we've asked individuals what they expect their returns to be, and we do hear large numbers. We hear individuals saying, I think it's about 8.9% above inflation. And I think we talked about this the last time I was on. Advisors have a much more realistic or pragmatic view of it, which is closer to 5.5% above inflation. What I think is important is that there's a discussion of how you get there and a realization of how much risk it would take to achieve that and how much you're willing to put at risk. So by making risk the focal point of that conversation, I think it makes the return expectations more realistic for individuals. What am I willing to put at risk to achieve something? And I think that that's the big challenge. We need to educate investors. We need to educate plan participants and help them understand how these pieces fit together so that they can make smart, informed decisions along the way.
Yeah, so smart. Right, exactly. That's what we do here on the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. Hey, real quick, we'll end it with this. You guys do great work there at the Durable Portfolio Construction Research Center. This new Department of Labor ruling with fiduciary responsibility over retirement accounts, you think that's going to help the vehicles, the DC plans that are out there, and helping educate the public? Or do you think it's not going to have a big impact on the retirement marketplace?
Well, I think anything that strives to help individuals better achieve their goals, to make sure that they're on track and doing it, is going to help. You know, I think what it comes down to is, you know, advisors and individuals working together to really map out what that plan looks like. You know, at Natixis Global Asset Management, when we look at things, we think it's important for individuals to work with advisors to understand what the risks are in the marketplace and really make smart, as I said, informed decisions about how they're going to achieve their goals.
So important, yeah. Thank you so much for the good work that you all do. And thanks for joining us again here on the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. And every time you have a study out, I really enjoy being able to tweet it out, send it out, and give people, an angle in on, you know, what's happening in the world of not just asset management, but saving for a future and having something to fall back on. It all comes down to planning and education, which I know we've talked about in the past. So thanks so much for joining us, and I hope to have you back before the new year as well.
Look forward to it, Steve. Thanks again.
Yeah, thanks.
Hey, Rich Dilley here. My friend Steve Cordasco, financial advisor and founder of Cordasco Financial Network, is back with a new retirement guide called Your Plan to a Successful Retirement. This guide is packed with helpful tips like how to make a retirement plan work for you, how to successfully generate cash flow in retirement, and how to utilize great tax savings strategies. This guide also uncovers the best practices to reduce stock market stress, how to find investment solutions that match your risk tolerance, and how to bring comfort and clarity to your retirement. Whether you are taking the first steps to retirement planning and don't know where to start, are in pre-retirement and looking to accumulate wealth, or already retired and looking to preserve your wealth, you should get a copy of Steve Cordasco's guide, Your Plan to a Successful Retirement, and it's totally free. Get your copy right now at cfnplan.com. That's CFN, and as in network, plan.com. Go right now to cfnplan.com.
And welcome back to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. I'm Steve Cordasco. We're going to touch on something that might be close to home for you, and that is a new study came out that shows a staggering statistic. Actually, the first time since 1880, we have seen our society here in the United States go this direction. I don't know if it has something to do with the presidential outcome, but boy, I tell you, there is something happening out there that is causing our kids to not want to leave the nest. Yeah. That's right. Parents are now the most common arrangement for people ages 18 to 34, the most common arrangement for living. Yeah, they're staying home. 18 to 34-year-olds. About 33% of millennials live with their parents. It's the first time living at home has outpaced living with a spouse for this age group since they started keeping record in 1880. My goodness. What do you think about that? Many parents say their kids need help, and therefore they're obliged by saying, hey, come on, door's open. Come on back. I know you need the help. Now, it's not always that way. Some are saying, you got to be kidding me, but out of guilt, whatever it may be, they leave the key under the mat and the kids come back. Is it healthy as a family unit to have your kids when they become technically adults beyond the age of 18 to still live at home? I myself, I guess, sort of lived at home, right? At 18, I went off to college. But I never viewed that as my home. I lived there while I went to school, but I was gone. First break I got. Loved coming home for Thanksgiving. It's fantastic. You roll in the house. You know more than everybody at the table. You're a genius. Parents are idiots. You get to tell them how much you know. Meet up with high school friends. And Christmas time rolls around. You get to spend all day on the couch. Watch TV, go out at night. It's break time. You're on vacation. And mom's cooking. It was wonderful. Four fantastic years. No wonder why kids want to go 5 and 6 years to college. But look, at some point, what was it? As soon as I graduated Temple, I never moved back home. I got a real job. And I got an apartment in the city. And I took the job I got. And I did the math, and I said, okay, this is what I can afford. Now let me look at what part of the city I can live in. And I lived right on the Maginot Line. One side was burned out buildings, and I lived on the other side of the street. I only had two buildings boarded up out of six row homes. And it was living. Walk to work, reward myself every now and then on a rainy day, with a taxi. There was only one taxi service I would use. They had green cars. But that was a reward. But no, that was it. Still go home to see mom and dad. I'd roll in on the weekends. Mooch a meal on Sundays. Sunday was always a good day to get a meal. Because there's always a lot of leftovers. And then mom would always pack 3 or 4 meals for the week. That was it. That was starting out. Then the neighborhood starts to get on your nerves. Person you're dating, you know, feels a little awkward. Your car gets stolen. I had two of those happen. Just gets to the point where you're saying, you know, I got to move up the food chain here a little bit. You hustle. And lo and behold, next thing you know, you're like that commercial. Never move into the suburbs. Never having kids. Never getting a minivan. Never having two kids, and then you're knee-deep in a family. That seemed to be at least my world, not the world today. My ace producer, Vince Quinn, you hear him on Sports Talk Radio. Vince, so you're a millennial.
Yes, I am.
You went to Fordham. After Fordham, you did the basement thing for a while at home?
Yeah, I was there. I got out of college. I was 22 years old. By the time I moved out of the house, I was 26.
Gosh.
Yeah. You're telling me.
How'd you feel about that? Like, you know, so anyway, so my kids, right? You know, I have 5 kids.
Yeah.
So my kids asked me the other day, we were talking about when I got engaged. And me and my buddy together got engaged because my wife and his now wife were friends. They were college roommates. Him and I became friends because they were college roommates. And so we're like, you know, I'm getting engaged too. All right, why don't we go on a road trip? We'll do this together. My kid made this symbol with his hand. What is that? That's a
loser.
It's an L, right?
Yeah.
And he puts it on his forehead. Like, Dad, you and a buddy, like, double engaged, dated, and he did this thing. And I go, what is that? He goes, loser. And I'm like, what?
I think that's pretty cool, actually.
It was pretty cool.
I've never heard of that. I mean, anyone could drop a knee at dinner, but to go on a road trip together, that's pretty cool.
The fact that we made it after the road trip, that was the key. So anyway, I'm not making the L symbol and putting it on my forehead, but how did you really, like, is it not, to me, if I would have stayed with my parents until 26, I would have been different, and it would have been... I might have been scarred for life. I would have had to probably see a shrink right now and talk about how none of my other friends did it. You know, I would have been like that guy on Wedding Crashers that lived in the basement saying, Mom, more meatloaf. Remember that guy?
Yeah, he's the best.
So, you know, you weren't that guy, right? Because everybody was, your whole generation sits in the basement screaming, Mom, more meatloaf, right?
Well, yeah, you know, I'm more of a steak guy than a meatloaf guy. But
well, that's nice. I mean, so you live in a good, you're in a good neighborhood with the parents, right?
Yeah, no, we're in a decent neighborhood. But you know, the relationship was interesting because for me specifically, like I'm working in radio, which you know this career path well, and you know, it's more of a long con. I started in radio, giving out T-shirts at events and stuff. It wasn't a high paying gig, but I knew I was working my way somewhere, and it was going to take some time. So. I mean, I hardly lived at home anyway, the same way you're talking about college. Hey, you're going to college, you're taking classes, you're meeting up with friends.
So that's interesting. That's one way to look at it. You were never there.
I wasn't there.
So
no.
In other words, you were using your parents for shelter, right, for a roof. But otherwise, it's not like you were working 24/7. You were out with friends doing some stuff. Right?
Occasionally, yeah. I mean, I was working. I've had stretches where I would work 70 hours a week. So, I mean, I was hardly home. They were basically the nicest bed and breakfast you could get. I mean, really.
So why would you leave? Why leave at 26?
Well, yeah, you know, maybe I made a mistake. Mom, Dad, I'm coming back home.
Yeah, I think you're on a lease now, right? So here's the question. Now, did your mom and dad like having you there?
They did.
They told you that?
Yeah.
Did you ever, like, eavesdrop? Well, you weren't there enough to, like, put your ear up against a door to say, when's he out of here? No?
Yeah, you know, I never caught them muttering under their breath, like, as soon as I closed it. Oh, thank God. You know, I never heard
anywhere. You're up Drexel Hill area, right?
Yeah, I'm in the Drexel Hill area.
Okay, so now, did you have – everybody's got the uncle, the brother. I know you got brothers, sisters. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's got somebody in the family that likes to, you know, dish it out. Anybody really get on you like, you know, dude, you're living at home?
No, not so much, you know,
wow.
Really, because
no pressure.
Because so many people saw it around, you know, it's so absurdly common that, you know, initially when I got out of school, it was all new, you know, it was new for people to be in the house so long. So the discussion was more of like when I would tell people, I mean, hey, I'm out at a bar. I meet a girl. Oh, well, you know, where are you living? Oh, well, I'm at home.
So that's your biggest issue. It's like, how do you, you know, you want to come home and, you know,
yeah,
watch a movie with me, my mom, my dad.
Exactly. So if that's
going to be. I think we got leftovers.
Well, I was certainly left over for other guys instead. But, you know, that was kind of the problem. But once you got around long enough, you realized how absurdly common it was. And so many people who are living at home and guys, you know, at high school reunions and things. What are you doing? Oh, well, I'm living at home. I'm working on this and that. And that's just kind of been how it is. Some people, though, and they're not necessarily doing it the way I did, where I was working for a job that, you know, I had to do a lot of part-time hours to get full-time. Mm-hmm. Instead, other people worked full-time jobs, but they were just comfortable living at home. They were saving money, and they said, forget it. I'll just stay here.
So, ladies and gentlemen, I, as a financial advisor and at our firm, Cordesco Financial Network, we, you know, obviously do planning. That's kind of a core of what we do. We make sure everybody has a plan. We bring plans to life. We make them interactive so people can see themselves in their plan. We also do investment solutions, but we do something that we've kind of evolved into over the last 5+ years or so, and that's coaching, lifestyle coaching. And this has been more and more on the discussion table with some of the folks that we help. And it's hey, our kids are here still living with us, or the kids need help with getting ahead today. So my question is this: is this healthy or not? Is this helping us as a country or not? Will this make the millennial generation stronger And what I mean by that, will they be more financially stable down the road? When I talk to some of the kids that my clients ask me to have a discussion with, the ones that are living at home, the ones that are just in a different place where you get to know them a little bit more because they're now an expense of, and they're part of the financial planning process because you kind of wrote them off that they'd be self-sufficient at a certain age, and they're not. No matter how you cut it, you might say, well, yeah, you know, your mom and dad might say, Vince is here, but it's not that expensive, you know. But it is. You know, you'd be surprised. There's extra wash that's been, you know, all that stuff adds up. Food, you know, electricity, the cost of carrying somebody. And you still might have been on their insurance plan, which I think you were working at CBS, so probably not.
Yeah, no, I was. I was on the insurance plan. And also when it came to other things, for example, the phone bill. Mm-hmm. You know, my dad gets some phone bill through his company. He gets a discount with a major carrier. Mm-hmm. And it got to a point where I said, look, I know my phone bill is like $35 a month, $60 a month, whatever it might be. Let me pay that. Like, I'm making enough money now. I want to help out if I'm living at home. I'm, you know, at this point, 24 years old, 25 years old. I want to pay. Let me do it. And as the result of me being their child, living at home with them still, I don't know if it was a pride thing or what, they just felt obligated to pay it themselves. They refused me every time. If I try to maybe leave $20 on the dresser, they'd hand it back to me. I mean, I could not pay if I wanted to.
So what'd you do with the money you saved living at home was a lot.
Yeah.
What'd you do with that? Did you get ahead yourself? Did you pay off some debt? Did you save? Or did you go to bars and say, hey, bud, can I borrow you? I just met this girl. Can we come hang at your place? And here's $20. I'll cover, you know, some of the,
Eat
for the night. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit of everything. Occasionally, you know, I'd save up enough money where I'd buy myself something. Holiday season, a lot of times they'd say, oh, well, hey, it's Christmas.
Were you able to save?
Yeah, I was. I have a savings account, and I've been doing pretty well, all things considered. So I have, you know, emergency fund, the whole thing. I'm pretty well covered.
So my question is, ladies and gentlemen, love your emails. You can email me, info@cfnplan.com. Is this a good thing or a bad thing? Is it healthy or not healthy? What is it going to do to this generation of 18 to 34-year-olds? That more than ever before in our history, more of them are living at home than with a spouse or in some other type of way. I'm viewing it more like, it looks as if they're getting ahead. Millennials have a pretty good nest egg set aside as a whole, more than any generation before them at that age, right? For example, I remember my first house I bought was, which is in Fairmount area of Philadelphia. My mortgage payment was $750 a month. That was, now, I was building equity. I viewed it as my rent was $710 a month. Hence, look at this. I can own a mortgage. But when you're paying rent on $710 or $700 a month, that's money is not going to savings, right? So there you go. So healthy or unhealthy? Good thing, bad thing? Here's the way I usually approach it. Let's take a look at whether or not it's creating a happy household. For me, at my stage of life with five kids, I would welcome kids to come back. Matter of fact, I think a career in teaching would be wonderful for a number of my kids. And I know it doesn't pay well, but I would want to help them. They're in a career path where they're helping others. And I will do what I need to do. They get holidays off. I get to see them, spend time with them. Summertime's off. I get to spend time at the Jersey Shore, which is what we love to do. Wonderful career path. I'm not going to force them to do it, but you know, I like having them around. And if they want to come back, I can kind of see having them come back. The fear is, at what point do you do damage? Is it damaging? Meaning, does there need to be some drive? I don't know if I would have built a career that I was able to build, if I had a palatial place to go back to, three meals a day, creature comforts, nothing really, you know, not having to go out and get it. Or maybe it's just in my DNA. How about you? What do you think? Are we, does it muddle the drive of young folks today to be able to go back and live with mom, dad, or loved ones? And in this case, all the way out into the early 30s. There are some countries out there that are having problems today, Italy being one of them, where people go back and live with the men, go back and live with their mama. They get their wash done. They get food cooked. They like to go out and club at night, meet the girls. They want a fancy car, but no job, good job, because there's no push to say, hey, you got to make it. There's no fear. There's comfort. And what will that look like for the future and the future of our country? There's an argument on the other side that guys like Vince are getting ahead with it, and that he's at a much better place from a saving standpoint than a lot of people his age were generations before. But the question is, Vince, if you didn't have your parents' home to go to, would you been tugged towards a different career path that might have more of earning potential in the future? And I don't mean that you and I shared the same. We both have received paychecks from the same employer that you work for now.
Mm-hmm.
And you know and I know that it is a very insecure future being in radio and media.
Oh, without question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Would it change your path?
Yeah, if I had to go out of the house, it would have totally changed my path. I mean, I couldn't survive working the part-time gig selling T-shirts, well, giving away T-shirts, I should say, and, you know, just supporting broadcasts in whatever way I would have to. I would not have been able to even dream of doing that if I couldn't have lived with my parents. It was the only thing that gave me a leg up, and it's kind of like, it's like a NASCAR. You go behind a car for a little bit, and you get that lack of resistance, and then you can speed up around the guy. I mean, I was basically behind that car when I was living with my parents, and now I'm slingshotting ahead. And that was the benefit that otherwise I wouldn't have had.
Interesting. Fascinating stuff. Here's what it comes down to, ladies and gentlemen. When you're doing your planning, those of you with maybe kids heading off to college, in college now, you'll go into those peak saving years. Usually it starts at around the age of 50, and then you come into your 60s. You better be prepared of what happens if the kids come back, because it's now becoming societal. And more of those kids that are going through college today are going to be coming home, because it's now become the norm. And are you budgeting for that? Are you prepared for it? Not just from a financial standpoint. What is the preparation from a lifestyle standpoint? For me, I think I would like it. Probably a little bit better than that snarly college age thing when they know everything. I don't think that I'm going to keep mine around very long, because I have a chore chart in my house. I'm keeping that damn chore chart. And they're doing chores. Trash is going out. Garage cleaned up. Take care. Get the dogs going. Mommy and I are going to head down. We're taking a little vacation. Make sure the dogs get fed. You know what I'm saying. Be prepared. And it can be wonderful if it works. Where there's financial strain's a different story, though. And everybody's got one. Somebody comes back not just looking for the roof over their head, but they're also looking to have you take care of them from a much broader financial place. You need to know what to do. If you need somebody to talk to, let me know. I'm always here for you in the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. Love to hear from you. Email me, info@cfnplan.com. Is millennials living at home good for our future, good for our country, and good for them financially as well as you? Keep it here on the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. I'm Steve Cardasco. Back in a moment.
Hi, Hugh Hewitt here. Do you have a sound retirement strategy? Have you taken the time to sit down and write a plan for achieving your retirement dream? Sadly, most of us spend more time planning our vacations than our own financial future. I'm here to tell the Delaware Valley a name that most people probably already know. Steve Cardasco. You've been listening to Steve for the last 25 years. You've been reading his articles in the Philadelphia Business Journal, Forbes, TheStreet.com. Steve Cordasco and his team have just come out with a new guide for retirement planning called Your Plan to a Successful Retirement. Get your copy right now at cfnplan.com. That's cfnplan.com. The guide is packed with helpful tips like how to make a retirement plan work for you, generating cash flow in retirement, tax saving strategies, ways to reduce stock market stress, investment solutions that match your risk, how to bring comfort and clarity to your retirement, much, much more. And now for my Hugh Hewitt listeners, I strongly recommend you get a copy of Steve Cordasco's guide, Your Plan to a Successful Retirement. Get your copy now at cfnplan.com. That's CFN, N as in network, plan.com. Go now to cfnplan.com.
Welcome back to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. I'm Steve Cordasco. Boy, what a great show we had today. A lot of fun talking about a whole host of different topics, specifically retirement plans with David Goodsell. Boy, this whole recount shenanigans that's going on and charitable giving and the fact that people around this time of year get very emotional and anxiety-ridden, and we do things that are sometimes not in our best interest. It even comes down to shopping. You know, a lot of people get very depressed around the holiday time, and they end up spending more than what they normally should spend on, and can be detrimental. So it's all good to keep that in check, and really hopefully have somebody there who is a partner or somebody by your side, whether it's a financial advisor who gets that, who understands you well enough to know that that's an Achilles heel for you, that can maybe, you know, be that little voice next to you that says, hey, be careful. But yet, they can be compassionate as well. How about the millennials living at home, too? Great stuff. A lot of it comes from Vince Quinn, who is my ace producer. Vince, what's trending out there? You've been keeping close tabs on shopping this holiday season. What's you know, you gave me some good info on millennials living at home. What's trending right now in the space of people's wallets and their finance?
Well, the biggest thing right now is clearly the holiday sales. You look at Black Friday, you look at Cyber Monday, and it's not even just the trend of this year, but it's the annual trend of this thing just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And you see it in the commercials where people are extending their sales, either, you know, a Black Friday sale maybe goes the whole week through Thanksgiving, you know, it goes through that whole next week, or you get people who extend it even before Thanksgiving now. It's just it all the numbers in every way, it just keeps getting bigger.
Really? So was this year a big jump so far right after Thanksgiving? Give us a rundown.
Okay, so Black Friday alone, just Black Friday, you had 154 million people that went shopping on Black Friday. It's 3 million more than you had just in 2015.
Wow. Wow, 3 million more?
3 million more.
I mean,
and this
they
is
actually
Black
went
Friday.
Out. They went out. They went
exactly. Right. In the traffic, in the early mornings, camping out, whatever it might
be. Less shootings, too?
I don't know about the trampling. I haven't heard any stories recently about the trampling stuff, but it
well, there was
it's
a
very
shooting.
Possible.
There was a local shooting. I don't know if you heard, but I think it was outside the Hamilton Mall down in South Jersey. So, but anyway,
yeah,
I didn't hear too much nuttiness. But
yeah, it seems like it's gotten a little more organized in that regard. Stores, you know, especially
well,
the bigger retailers, they want to be better
Jill
about
Stein
it.
I think Jill Stein stole some of the show because she was out, you know, she was asking for money too.
Yeah, she certainly did.
So wow, that's huge. 3 million more.
3 million, 154 million people decided to leave their house on Friday and go shopping or go on for some of the online deals. And so everyone was doing it.
I was out trying to get something for free.
Oh, yeah? What were you trying to get?
I went striper fishing.
Oh, there.
I did. It cost me gas, but.
Did you get any fish?
Caught two. 240-some-odd inchers. Oh, yeah,
there
ones.
You go.
You know, eight for a week.
Hey, fish your wish. Yeah, you can't get that at the market. So, yeah, people are going out for Black Friday. $3.34 billion spent on
wow.
just Black Friday alone. One single day, $3.34 billion.
What did Cyber Monday look like?
Cyber Monday was crazier, actually. Cyber Monday continues to get bigger, just the same as Black Friday. But you had $3.45 billion. So you had even more money, almost $100,000 or $100 million more, $100 million more.
People are crazy.
It's insane.
Now, listen, I didn't participate. This was the first year. Actually, I did it years ago, and then I went away from it the last 5 years. This was the first time in the past 5 years that instead of giving a tangible gift to clients of ours, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes we give olive oil, we'll give wine, you know, different types of just fun things that people can use around Thanksgiving to say thank you. We gave to a charitable organization. So I would tell you, I'm not in that statistic, but wow, almost $7 billion. Let's chalk this up. It's got to be the Trump effect. People are excited Trump's coming in office, and they're just feeling like they're going to do better. So they're spending? Can we call it that?
It's possible. I mean, if you're looking around, you see all the numbers are going up everywhere in the stock market as well. So people see, hey, I got more returns coming in. I look good. Well, let me go out and buy that, you know, that TV that I've been looking for.
My bet is CNN is not saying it's the Trump effect. My bet is CNN is saying it's the weather, because I got to tell you, it was gorgeous out when I was out on the water on Friday. Absolutely a gem.
Yeah, it's been a wonderful late November. So, yeah. I figure that same effect is everywhere if it's up here in the Northeast. So you got to figure that's part of the boost, those extra 3 million people out on Black Friday.
I tell you, some people would say when it comes to politics, it's the economy, stupid. So if you want to say it's the economy and that we have a better economy, we voted an underdog in. So I don't know. There's a lot to take from this. It'll all flesh out, I'm sure. But boy, I tell you, as we enter into holiday season, please, you know, make the smart decisions with your wallet. And for those that are trying to get their hands on a piece of your wallet, just take a step back. Are they playing with your emotions, your anxieties, your fears? And is there something inside you from a mood standpoint that might be shifting? Because a lot of times when that happens, people try to spend their way out of their anxiety and their emotions. So be careful of that. I'm Steve Cordesco. Thanks for joining us here on the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. You can email me, always info@cfnplan.com. That's info@cfnplan.com. Please follow me on Facebook. It's a good way to engage with us, facebook.com/cfnplan. And on Twitter, we're using that very actively, @cfnplan. Make it a great week. Thanks for joining us here on the Your Life, Your Wealth Network.
Thanks for joining us on the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. All of our shows are reproduced as podcasts and can be listened to on demand at your convenience. If you're interested in learning more about applying the principles we discuss to your personal financial circumstances, please visit Cordasco Financial Network at cfnplan.com or call our office at 215-558-3500. We hope you'll join us again next time on the Your Life, Your Wealth Network.